Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this creepy, spooky, this is basically a regular night. So welcome back anyway to my Sunday night show. Very, very happy to be here with the author of a very, very cool book. Now, I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago on the show that I was at this radio conference where I have all these people coming and pitching mostly books. I mean, some people were pitching seminars and some were pitching kind of life change things. But the vast majority of people who came to this publicity summit, is what they call it, were trying to get a mention at least or an interview or something about their new books that they've published or had published on various kinds of shows and magazines, everything from the Dr. Keith Ablo show to Oprah magazine to, I swear to God, this time there were a couple of people from the 700 Club, which was kind of bizarre. But, well, not any more bizarre than my little show being there. And so I met with all these people, and as usual, a lot of diet books, a lot of books about how, you know, this can save your marriage, or this will kill your marriage, or smoking will do this to you, and 90%, they're not even on the table. And then there's about 5 to 10% that I'm like, oh, you know, if the show is right, if it feels right, if it coincides with a cool holiday on the calendar, it really makes sense. Now, it just so happens that all the stars were aligned for this particular guest and this particular book, because even if it weren't around Halloween time, when I saw this book, when I saw what this was about, I was like, yes, this was literally the one guest of the whole batch of folks that I talked to that day, where instantly my eyes lit up and I was like, yes, gotta talk about this, gotta have Michael Largo in the neighborhood, because he's written a book called Final Exits, The Illustrated Encyclopedia of How We Die. Don't change the station. It's actually going to be really, really cool. It's a book about the myriad and millions of ways over the centuries that people have found to exit this earth, from the more basic things, shooting, hanging, and basic expiration, to some of the weirdest things you have ever heard. Except we're going to hear them now from the author, Michael Largo. Thanks for coming to the neighborhood, Michael. How you doing?
Hello, Dave. Thank you for having me.
And even though I'm Jewish, happy sort of Halloween. Are you Jewish?
Is that a Jewish or a Christian holiday?
It's pagan,
Druid holiday.
Yeah, well, you don't look Druish.
So no, I'm not a Druid right now.
So, okay. Do you celebrate? I mean, is it any kind of thing?
No, it's not. It's another day. But it's a fun day. I guess it makes one of the 3,000 different ways I found people die, though. Halloween in particular, they seem to go out of their way to do some wild things that day.
Such as?
Well, I mean, there was one guy that, his kid came home with one of these full-face rubber masks. And he would basically grab his chest, fall down, turn red, and his wife is saying, "What's wrong with you? I mean, this is just like a rubber mask. It's our kid inside the mask. Nothing could stop him." What they found out was, when it got a little bit further, and the emergency medics are coming, is that the guy actually had an allergy to the rubber in the mask.
Oh, man.
He had a latex sensitivity, so he wasn't fooling around when he saw this this mask. So that's the kind of, weird things that happen on this holiday.
So that's out of, like, one of those Halloween movie kind of
right.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a real deal with this guy, and for years that he didn't, when kids used to wear regular masks, I guess, Zorro or Lone Ranger, but mm-hmm. Now with these full face ones, that's what really took them down. See, it's other weird things like that. I mean, I've got a whole list in the book of the actual Halloween tampering of candies.
No, I heard that was so overblown, and that were maybe five incidences in 50 years.
Yeah, it's very little. I only found about 12.
And four of them were mine, so.
I only found about 12, nothing real serious. Most of them. I think the worst one was way back when, in 65, some lady, not too far from here, I think she wanted to teach the older kids how not to, they shouldn't be trick-or-treating. It was her idea. So she put a skull and crossbones on her bag of treats, and inside of that one, she gave regular candy to the little kids, to the teenagers coming around, who she felt shouldn't be trick-or-treating. She put up the skull and crossbones on it and put in, you know, the typical rat poison covered in chocolate, you know, the typical poison ant buttons, things like that.
What are poison ant buttons?
Well, these little buttons that I guess you would put pesticides around and throw them around the yard. And
oh, my God.
You know, so, I mean, they are really deadly.
They're tasty, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if you have more than two. But so this, you know, this is about the, this is the most serious one. And, you know, the older brother took the kid and let the kid eat some of the candy. Didn't, you know, wasn't watching him or whatever.
Right.
So that, you know, that was probably the most serious one. But that's overblown. And even the, you know, the trick-or-treating on the kids getting killed by cars, it is a little bit between 3 and 6. There goes a slight peak in fatalities from that.
Because they're so tiny? Or?
Well, you know, it's just run. You know, the they're excited. You know, same. It's the same thing like any other thing. And, ice cream trucks are the same way. You know, more kids get it coming away from the ice cream truck than going to it, and you would think it would be more, they'd be running towards it more. Than
have there been any ice cream truck shootings along the line of someone just got sick of hearing da 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 dum da dum da dum da dum da dum every day, same 10 times a day, and suddenly someone comes out with a 44 and
right. Right. Well, the ice cream is even, you know, a little serious. You know, another side of the ice cream thing is very weird because, you know, they have turf wars. You know, I put it in the book. I have a section of ice cream wars. That I think it was last year, there was like 75 people killed and related to ice cream trying to protect their vending routes.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, in this book, I tried to make it where it's not just, you know, the regular, you know, basic things that you would read about, but categorize in a way that would be a cool way to have if, you know, you eventually do check out what you're all going to do. Like a cool way, like, you know, say you died from a flying cow, say, for example, would be a better way than just, you know.
Talk to me about this
flying cow. Well, in the book, I categorize flying cows as people that run into things when they're driving in the country. Now, this one particular incident, the cow was walking, you know, crossing the road, I guess, and a Mercedes hit him at going at, you know, 70 or 80, 90 miles an hour, and the cow went airborne. And, you know, some other guy just driving along in a little Toyota pickup sees his flying cow coming in at him. And, you know, unfortunately, he was at the wrong place at the right time, or however you want to put it. And the cow went through his windshield. So that was fatality by flying cow.
Which is kind of interesting because he was leaning on two horns at once.
Yeah, so.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So he had, you know, that's other categories I have. You know, I also have the regular stuff. You know, it's an A to Z source guide of more than the 3,000 ways people die in America. The weirdest thing about this is that when I first started researching this book, I had discovered that 300 years ago, which is where I started from counting, was that there were only 100 known causes of death. And so I said, wow, you know, people are really dying in some new and unusual ways. Back then, it was really simple stuff. Actually, I found the death certificate of a guy in the 1700s who they wrote on this poor guy's record that he died actually of lack of ambition. So that's how that's how precise they were about this guy.
I think we call those the Yankees. No, no, they just die in airplanes. But well, also there's this thing, and I've gone through a few pages of it, and I'm having a fantastic time. I'm probably going to read it cover to cover just because it's so cool, and it's illustrated, and it's really fun to read. But almost every page has something that is surprising. Like you mentioned Alzheimer's. It did not occur to me that at this point, you don't actually know that someone has Alzheimer's until
the autopsy, yeah, that's it, you know. You don't really know if they have it, and they're really not certain if it's caused by old age. So that was another category. It's very strange because the CDC says that 25,000 people die of Alzheimer's every year, but actually, it's no one really knows for sure. You know, and also they knew this disease a long time ago. They used to just call it senility or old age. The first guy, Alzheimer, who discovered Alois Alzheimer in 1915, he was working with old people who were in an insane asylum because that's where they would put people when they were old. It wasn't, you know, like today. They would just put them in a crazy house. And that's where he started working, saying that these people aren't crazy. It's something else going on. It's Alzheimer's.
And ultimately, Alzheimer's is a killer. I mean, people end up dying from it rather than heart attack necessarily.
Right, exactly. And, you know, then I, you know, in the book, I also try to have some famous people who had it. One of the interesting characters was Audubon. You know, he used the painted birds, famous for conservation. But after he painted all these birds, traveled all over the country, exact detailed work, when he finally at age 65 he returned to New York City, and he couldn't remember a single bird he painted. You know, he couldn't tell a pigeon from a pig. I mean, he was it was a sad way for him to go, for his record of all his he had created.
By the way, was he, I love that line, I remember the pigeon from a pig. Was that your line, or was that in his...
Yeah, no, I like that alliteration.
You came up with it. Okay. What are some of the funnier ways that people have either offed themselves or been offed? The flying cow is pretty neat.
Yeah, a flying cow is good. Well, you know, it's just some of the weird things, I guess, that really get your attention. You know, there's this one... You know, people put things in their mouth, which is odd. There's one woman, young woman, I guess she was in her 20s or so. They couldn't figure out. She was eating 3 meals a day, but she was starving, and they couldn't find out what was wrong with her. Then it was discovered she started, you know, as a young kid, having this small habit of, you know, taking small nibbles out of her hair.
Yes, I remember this.
Yeah. She's taking small nibbles, and, you know, found out that hair is even more addictive than some drugs, because once you start ingesting it, you just can't seem to stop, if you ever know anyone who starts chewing on their hair. Anyway, so she kept chewing on her hair, and nothing could stop her. I guess it would have been a good idea if they would have just given her a haircut, but they didn't come up with that. So by the time she had finally died of starvation, they had found a hairball the size of a soccer ball. Inside her stomach, blocking the nutrients from being absorbed into her body. So that's pretty pretty bizarre way to go out.
Getting at least some protein from that.
Yeah, I don't think it's digestible.
If she used a yucca shampoo, that might have sure about two of the food groups.
At least two. So I mean, you know, that's things, putting things in your mouth, toothpicks. You know, more people have died from toothpicks than lightning in the last 100 years.
Really?
Yeah. You know, we all worry, you know, stay out of the storm, you know, lightning, all this stuff. But, you know, more people, you know, those little hot dogs with the toothpick in it.
Yeah, those, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Those people, you know, more people swallow the toothpicks than have died from lightning. So that's a pretty bizarre way of looking at it. You know, I try to look at common things, too. Everyone knows, you know, choking is a serious thing. You go to, a lot of people die from choking. But the interesting statistic is that more people actually die in restaurants from choking than at home, because they're more embarrassed to signal for help sooner, because they still want to remain looking cool, you know, in front of the...
it's like people breaking their bones on the sidewalk, and they're like, don't help me!
Right. Hello, this is Michael Largo, author of Final Exits, the Illustrated Encyclopedia of How We Die, and I'm glad to be on Dave's Gone By, WGBB.
One thing I wanted to ask about, and somebody else wrote a book about this that I was curious, I never was able to contact the author, but I remember, maybe you can actually help me on this, about 20 years ago, seeing in a newspaper a little item about a paragraph about a midget who was in a circus, and he died because, you've heard of this, he was on a trampoline, and he bounced sideways and was swallowed by a hippopotamus.
Right.
I remember a friend of mine just not even able to talk about this for a week because we could not stop laughing hysterically at the image of this poor midget bouncing and dying by being gobbled to death. And then somebody just wrote a book a couple of years ago saying that's one of those urban myths that keeps popping up and it never actually happened.
Right. Well, I mean, there was a book I think just this year came out, said... little person, as they
Franz Dosch, right?
Right.
Yeah.
His name was Odd. I found his last name, and I really did a lot of research because I too love that story. And actually, I have a small mention of him. There was in the Melbourne Herald Sun in July 1999, and they had a story about a particular man, same situation. His name was Hito Maka. He was age 34, and he jumped off a trampoline into a hippo. Now, the only thing with this is that they did try into a hippo that was yawning at the same time.
No, but again, would this have been, was he a midget?
Yes, he was, I think he was 39 inches. He was 39 inches, yes.
But here again, we have to ask, is it, again, this big old funny hoax, or is it actually, the first one was a hoax, but this one actually happened, or they both actually happened?
Yeah, well, the first one, I think this was really part of this guy's act, but what happened was that this hippo, they didn't know that they have a gag reflex. So if you go down so far into a hippo's mouth,
yeah,
they involuntarily swallow.
Oh.
And, the crowd thought it was funny. They were still, you know, they thought it was part of the act and they were cheering.
And that's why hippo wives are beloved. Yeah.
But it took them a little bit too long to extract Hito Maka from
so is there footage of, so this is an actual, this really happened to Hito.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And that was yawning.
Well, I heard there was one guy, this is absolutely honest to God true, some conservationist guy, was killed when he swam with a stingray.
Yeah, well, that's been pretty much in the news. You know, in the book I have a section I call as, you know, this you know, I think this guy was trying to get ratings, but we know that. But, yeah, I have a whole section called what I call zoo fatalism. Yeah. Zoo fatalism people have an affinity to being dangerously close to wild animals. And I've documented this where there's been over 95 cases in the last 10 years of people that are just getting a little bit too close to wild animals, keeping them as pet. You know, keeping a Bengal tiger as a pet is often a, maybe a risky idea.
Well, we're in Babylon, Long Island right now. No, this is
there
not.
Is, this
Lindenhurst.
There's a wild
2
tiger.
2 weeks ago, a guy, he had a menagerie of alligators, crocodiles. I thought it was pretty cool because he had an emu farm in the backyard. that's me. I want an emu farm. But he also had these snakes and stuff that you don't want to have.
Right.
Well, Lindenhurst, I mean, that's a couple of
miles
from here.
That's not too far, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it exists. You know, in the book, in that section, I have, there's ostriches. People think, you know, ostriches are cool, too. So there's one guy who had an ostrich farm. And he had to go away, and he asked his mother and father to come over and feed the ostriches for a couple of weeks. And,
That can never be good. Somehow I thought that can't end well.
It's not going to end well. But, they thought it was, a big friendly bird, cuddly bird, and, Disney creature or something. So they went into the pen to feed the ostriches grain as instructed by the son. But they didn't realize that there was a certain period of time when the ostriches are mating.
Oh, no.
That they're very territorial. And, these poor parents got, it was just a scene. They
were they kicked or what?
Oh, yeah. They have, a drop kick on an ostrich is like, 10 Bruce Lees, So it's...
Really?
Yeah, they got a powerful kick.
Oh, my goodness.
And... So, I mean, it was a scene. So that was one of the lists in Zoo Fatalism that I have.
Minute Man, the superheroes of photocopying, printing and binding. Minute Man, no job too big or small. Minute Man, family run since 1975. Minute Man, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island, next to the new Lowman's shoe store. Tell them Dave sent you for 10% off. Minuteman, hero of our photocopying dreams. We're talking with Michael Largo, author of the book Final Exits, the Illustrated Encyclopedia of How We Die, published by HarperCollins, actually. They call it Harper now, although I seem to remember it being HarperCollins, under popular culture / humor. So you can get this everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and pretty much everywhere books are sold.
Bookstore,
you can get Final Exits by Michael, L-A-R-G-O, Largo. So Michael's telling us more about how people have died coming close to animals.
Right, animals. Another thing is... people have heard about beaver fever.
Okay. I don't think it's what you mean.
Yeah, that's not what I mean. You know, it's not Animal House version. It's not the movie
Unless,
version.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, you know, when you tell, it's an, I mean, this is the strangest thing. When I saw this in the medical categories of people dying, and I saw beaver fever, I had to look it up because, you know, we all may have that sooner or later. But the real thing is that you get this, when you say you go up the country, anywhere that there's mountains and you drink water from a stream, you... where beavers or muskrats have been swimming, they have a, you know, a bacteria that you can pick up, and you get beaver fever, which the symptoms are, and this is what's very confusing, you start sweating, you know, you're preoccupied with, you know, you can vomit at any time. You know, it's similar to somebody who may be symptoms of being lovesick. So...
all right.
You know, beaver fever is an actual disease, and if you, but it's a type of disease I don't know if I'd like to have on my death certificate. He died of beaver fever. You know? So, one of those ones you want to avoid.
All right. So moving just away from the book for a little bit, because it's really cool, and I want to spend almost a whole segment on it. But I might as well ask, A, what started you on this topic? And again, this is not just one of these little 100-page kind of cute sort of books for a holiday thing. This is a real encyclopedic tome, and yet very readable and fun and full of really good illustrations. But this is not something you sat down and did in about 3 months just to
right.
make a quick buck. I mean,
yeah, well, actually, yeah. I mean, actually, this thing took me, I thought it was going to take a year or two. And I started back in the middle 90s, but it's actually taken me 10 years to complete. Because the statistics on these various means of checking out are bafflingly scattered. I mean, there's no real place you can go to. Even, you know, if a death certificate today happens, it takes 5 years before the actual cause gets filtered through the vital statistics in, you know, in Washington. So it takes a long time to gather these things, and especially going back any time past the 1950s or the 1930s, many of the records are only in small municipalities or archives, and I had to go to many of the major cities to actually go through the microfiche to find record after record to put in. I'd written a few mystery novels. I had published a few mystery novels. Mystery writers always like to have accurate ways of knocking off villains, so that was my interest in that. But it even goes back further. I grew up in Staten Island, and my father was an NYPD homicide detective. So his form of education was taking us trips into Manhattan to show us, you know, not this typical, you know, Radio City Music Hall or one of these deals, but he had a great sense of statistics. He would take us to any corner and say there was X amount of murders in this building, and the building looked like normal to me, or, you know, this amount of fatalities on that corner, or this crime happened here. And I was looking at, I remember looking at these buildings and people walking on the street that have no clue of the history of this. And, you know, I had wondered, you know, like a sign should be posted, you know, like a big warning sign or, you know, something. This is what happened here.
Did it creep you out, or were you just fascinated?
No, I was pretty fascinated. You know, it come from a long, you know, grandfather, uncles, everyone was police. So it was always common talk, you know, around that dinner table. It was nothing so strange. So I was always fascinated with that. And I was fascinated by the possibility that these people walking around had no clue of it and that it could happen... and obviously does at any time. So I think I kind of really wanted to have two things. I wanted to have, like, my own 500-page sign, which is final exits. And secondly, I really wanted to, you know, this question, is it chance or fate, you know? So I figured, well, you know, probably no one really knows that answer. But if I at least know the 3,000 different causes and really what goes on that these things could happen... is a good way that maybe, you know, myself and others could avoid some of these things that are just sometimes are just basically dumb things to do.
Have you ever seen a death?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was, you know, part of the education. A couple of times, you know, I went to the morgue with my father.
I've seen only dead bodies actually from when I married a woman whose family is not Jewish. So when they have a death there,
oh yeah, the wakes,
there's an open casket.
Yeah.
The first time I ever seen.
Yeah.
But ever seen anybody getting killed or?
Well, I mean, I've seen it. You know, I've been close to a car accident, and I had my grandfather who died. While I was right there, and my father as well. I was with him when he died. So, I mean, actually, I've seen people when they died. That's another whole book. But, I really didn't want to get to the point of, I think we all want to live longer. So I really wanted to have this as like the 101 on longevity, where we could look at all the different causes, the things that get us. And maybe in some way by reading this, we're entertained in a way, and we also remember the people that passed. And we use their lives as some way to instruct us to avoid some of these more bizarre and interesting things.
I might be a little uncomfortable, but I do want to double back on this because my wife had worked at one point in a hospital and then had been to the whole thing of emergency rooms and morgues and stuff like that. And she had seen one person die, an old person. And I think that's the only one, thank goodness. But it was not a bad experience. I mean, she was old. It was time. And she did see something happen, she says, at that moment. It was like a literal, to her, leaving of the spirit from the body. Now, I don't know if she was kind of just in her seeing that because that's how we'll cope with it, or if maybe there's this spirit that's actually leaving and going somewhere else. So I know it's very, very personal to you because there's a grandfather and a father involved. But did you, at that moment, was there something happening? Was there something else?
That's a really good question. I do talk about this a lot. The subject of the book is before that happened. But I have to tell you that with my father, it's a strange thing because, he was an inspiration for a lot of this type of knowledge. And I was with him when he was dying, and he had a hospice. He had a hospice person there, and which the family was around. And the hospice person said, "You have to leave the room you have to leave right now." And I didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay with him. I was, with him the entire time up to that point. She says, "No, everyone really has to leave right now. You can stand on the other side." Because he won't be able to leave if we're there with him. And the moment we walked out, that's when he died.
Wow.
Yeah, because the hospice person had said that it's something where they're trying to hold, they're still at the very last minute trying to take care of others. And I did see this happen. I mean, it was a really weird thing. And because... where he stayed at home, it wasn't in a hospital. We had him at home, and it was he had these skylights in his living room, where his hospital bed was set up, and it was cloudy all day, and I exactly what you had said, I sensed something, like there was some kind of light or something, moving towards this skylight. It was a really, really amazing thing.
It wasn't a farce.
It was a real thing. And I tell you, I think that was, it was around about a year after I started this book. This is one of the other strange things, making a personal story into a book. Like I said, my father was this big, big New York City cop guy, and then he had gotten cancer. Cancer is the type of deal you start withering away from the inside out. And so that was a difficult thing to see. But I also wanted to know how he got this. I mean, this guy was into, like, health foods before there were health foods, type of deal. So I looked back into his records of what he had done. And he had went over to Hiroshima, like, 3 months after that happened, as, the part of the army to keep control over there. And that's where I traced back where he had this dormant cancer.
3 months. Yeah. 3 whole months after they dropped
right.
the
plane. Yeah.
So pretty much everybody living in North Korea now.
Right. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that was a personal motivation to start writing the book. You know, when I was writing this for these last 10 years, I would tell people, what are you writing about? And I say, well, I'm writing a book about death. And, you know, they would always take a step or two back, you know. So that reaction and talking about the subject, I tried to tell all these statistics through stories of famous and ordinary people, you know, the bizarre and the common things, in a way that, you know, I don't like to use the word entertaining, but in a lively way that people can approach the subject so that it's not so, you know, morbid or grim, so that it's a project that you can come to and read the book and open any page and say, wow, I didn't know that. And hopefully by the time it's all over, take away some different ways that, you know, you may avoid some things that you didn't do before.
I mean, you can't obviously avoid everything in this 500-page book, because you end up just being a shut in, and then you would die because you couldn't
then
put
you
any
shut
food
it.
In your system.
You die being shut in. So.
So, but I mean, I will say, you definitely described it right. I mean, I picked it up thinking, okay, I mean, I love the idea of the book, but am I actually going to want to read Death After Death After Death? And just the way, and it's not even being funny, ha-ha, but there's a lightness to it, and the way it's laid out and the way it's done. It's encyclopedic, but it's also like a readable and, I hate to say, kind of fun book in a way. I'm going to remind people one more time that we're talking with Michael Largo, the author of Final Exit. So we have to make a final exit with you, to get to other stuff on the show. But can you think of, since it's Halloween time, the really, like, the creepiest, nastiest one or two ways to go that have happened?
Well, I mean, I guess the real creepiest stuff is back, you know, 100 years ago when Halloween became a hit with Americans. You know, because 100 years ago, the biggest fear people had was being buried alive. You know, nowadays we have being kept alive. But buried alive was, I mean, it was such a common thing. And, I mean, you can imagine, like you had mentioned before with, you know, the wakes and things like that. People used to have wakes in their home, you know, to keep the bodies in the home. And there was at least over 3,000 documented cases where people just sat up.
Well, it's Finnegan's Wake right there. Yeah. That's the plot of Finnegan's Wake.
I mean, it's just sat up.
I've never read it, but...
You know, that happened all the time. You know, it was such a fear that they had devices where, you know, they had bells in the coffin and even the graveyard shift, the term that we have today. I don't know if you're working the graveyard shift tonight, but if you have that, that comes from when you used to keep people around the coffin to make sure they weren't, you know, alive before they were buried. So even in terms in our language that we use today.
That is pretty darn creepy. But it has not been creepy at all having you, Michael Largo, in the neighborhood. Again, people can get Final Exits everywhere.
Yeah, all the bookstores, Amazon.com. You can also check out FinalExits.com, my website. I've got some good illustrations. You can see an idea what the book's like that way, too.
Michael Largo, thank you again, and please, don't die.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.